Imagine finally finding your voice after years of silence. You're finally ready to confront this trauma of sexual abuse that you endured as a child, only to be met with what feels like a legal shield wall.
Yeah.
That's the difficult reality facing many survivors of abuse within the Catholic Church, particularly here in the U.S.
It's heartbreaking. It's and what makes it sting even more is that it often involves institutions that should be beacons of moral authority, you know, resorting to what some see as legal maneuvering.
Right. And that's what this deep dive is all about.
Okay.
We're tackling this wave of Catholic dioceses declaring bankruptcy with a spotlight on the prominent case in San Francisco.
Okay.
Is this a necessary financial measure, as they claim, or a calculated move to avoid compensating victims? We're going to unpack that with insights from Clemens Lynchinger, an atheist humanist, author, and legal expert who offers a very unique perspective on this sensitive issue.
Yeah, what's fascinating about Lynchinger's analysis is he doesn't shy away from calling out what he sees as hypocrisy. He argues that the church's actions often contradict their proclaimed values.
Okay, let's dive into that.
Okay.
Let's say you're a survivor who decides to come forward after years of carrying this burden. What kind of emotional toll are we talking about?
I mean, the courage it takes to come forward can't be overstated. It's often a deeply personal decision made after years, if not decades, of wrestling with this trauma.
Right.
To then face what feels like a legal wall instead of compassion and support, it can be utterly devastating.
And this is where the California Child Victims Act comes into play, right?
Exactly. Now, this act was a game changer for survivors in California. For our listeners outside the Golden State, it's important to understand that the statute of limitations is like a time limit for filing certain lawsuits. Before this act, many survivors were barred from seeking justice simply because too much time had passed since the abuse occurred. The California Child Victims Act extended that time limit, giving many survivors a fighting chance to have their cases heard.
So this act was a huge step toward justice.
Absolutely.
But it also seems to have triggered this wave of lawsuits that dioceses weren't quite prepared for.
Right. The floodgates opened.
Right.
And instead of directly addressing these claims, some dioceses, including the Archdiocese of San Francisco, opted to file for bankruptcy.
Okay.
Their argument is that it's the fairest way to allocate their limited resources among what's often a large number of claimants.
So essentially, they're saying their hands are tied.
That's the gist of it, yes.
Okay.
But Lynchinger doesn't buy it. He argues that if the church truly valued justice and compassion, they would find a way to compensate survivors, even if it meant liquidating assets.
Right.
In his words, liquidation, while seemingly drastic, is the most ethical path.
Wow.
It prioritizes the victims, not the institution. He sees it as a matter of putting their money where their mouth is, so to speak.
And that brings us to San Francisco, where Archbishop Cordiglione, who heads the archdiocese, has become a very central figure in this debate.
Right.
He claims bankruptcy is necessary to maintain the church's financial integrity so they can continue their holy mission.
And that's where things get really interesting, because if you dig a little deeper, you start to see a pattern of actions that seem to contradict this stated commitment to transparency and accountability. Take, for example, the over 500 lawsuits filed in San Francisco alone.
Wow.
That's a staggering number.
Yeah.
And it represents hundreds of individual stories of suffering.
It is really hard to wrap your head around a number like that.
Right.
500 lives impacted.
Exactly. And while Archbishop Cordiglione has said that filing for bankruptcy is the more compassionate route, because it allows for a resolution.
Right.
Lynchinger argues that true compassion would mean swift and just compensation, even if it meant the diocese having to sell off property or investments.
So it comes down to what compassion actually looks like in action.
Right. And this gets to the heart of Lynchinger's argument.
Yep.
He believes that the church is prioritizing its own institutional preservation over the needs of those who were harmed.
Right.
He sees these bankruptcy filings as a way to manage liability, potentially minimizing payouts to survivors.
Well, how would that work exactly? How would bankruptcy proceedings potentially lead to smaller payouts?
Well, bankruptcy courts often involve complex negotiations with creditors. Yeah. And in this case, survivors would be considered creditors.
Right.
Along with other entities that the diocese owes money to.
Right.
During these negotiations, there's often an attempt to reach settlements for less than the original claims.
Okay.
It's a way for the debtor, in this case the diocese, to try and get a handle on their financial obligations.
So a strategic move.
You could say that. And what's even more concerning is that San Francisco isn't an isolated case. Across the U.S., over 24 dioceses have taken this route in recent years.
Wow.
It begs the question, are we witnessing a calculated strategy to limit accountability on a much broader scale?
It certainly raises that question. And this brings us to another layer of this story that feels particularly troubling.
Okay.
The issue of transparency.
Right.
The San Francisco diocese, under Archbishop Cordiglione,
right,
is the only one in California that hasn't released a list of clergy credibly accused of abuse.
Which is particularly noteworthy given that he promised to do so back in 2018.
Yeah.
That lack of transparency, that silence, speaks volumes.
Right.
Not only does it hinder accountability for past offenses,
right,
but it also potentially puts more children at risk.
Because without transparency, it becomes difficult to identify potential abusers who might still be operating within the church.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It creates a culture of secrecy that allows these horrific acts to continue.
Right.
And that's simply unacceptable. Remember what Linshinger said, transparency is not a threat to the faithful. It's a safeguard. He believes that sunlight is the best disinfectant.
It's hard to argue with that.
Right.
So we're seeing a pattern of legal maneuvering, potential lack of transparency, and a disconnect between words and actions.
Yeah.
For example, Archbishop Cordiglione, in a message to survivors, offered Christian solidarity and suggested they find solace in prayers and fasting.
Instead of substantial financial compensation for the trauma they endured,
right,
it makes you wonder about priorities.
It's almost like saying, we're with you in spirit.
Yeah.
But when it comes to concrete action, it's a totally different story.
It's a disconnect, and Linshinger really picks up on this.
Yeah.
He argues that this disparity between words and actions
reveals
a deeper issue at play here.
Yes.
Institutional preservation taking precedence over the well-being of those harmed.
He's saying that by prioritizing, even if it means filing for bankruptcy, by prioritizing its own financial stability,
right,
the church is essentially choosing self-preservation over the very people it should be protecting.
That's his argument. And it's a tough pill to swallow for many, especially those survivors who are seeking acknowledgement and accountability.
Right.
You know, and it begs the question, can an institution,
right,
even one as large and influential as the Catholic Church,
yeah,
truly pursue justice and healing while also prioritizing its own survival?
That's the big question. I mean, that's a huge question.
Yeah.
And one without easy answers.
Absolutely.
What would true accountability look like in this situation?
That's the million-dollar question, right?
Right.
Linshinger suggests that it requires a complete kind of overhaul of priorities, a genuine willingness to listen to the voices of survivors, to really prioritize their needs.
Right.
It involves acknowledging the harm caused and taking concrete steps to make amends,
right,
even if those steps come at a cost.
He's advocating for action over words,
yeah,
like walking the walk, not just talking the talk.
He argues that genuine healing can only begin when there is true accountability.
Right.
And that requires more than prayers and fasting.
Right.
It requires concrete action and tangible support,
yeah,
for those who have been harmed.
So where do we as observers of all of this go from here? I mean, this deep dive has been heavy, to say the least.
It has. Yeah. But it's important to remember that this isn't just a story about the Catholic Church.
Right.
This is a story about institutional accountability.
Yeah.
It's about the courage of survivors who speak out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about our collective responsibility to demand justice and transparency from those in positions of power.
It's a reminder that silence protects abusers, not the abused.
Absolutely.
And that true change requires all of us to confront these very uncomfortable truths head on.
Yeah.
Linshinger's insights offer a really powerful framework for considering not just this specific case, but any situation where institutions are grappling with past wrongs. And he leaves us with this final thought. The true measure of any institution's morality lies not in its pronouncements, but in its actions.
Wow.
Let that one sink in for a moment. It's a powerful note to end on. This has been a deep dive into a very difficult subject. Thank you for joining us.